Okay, guys, so welcome back to another episode of Can We Talk About It? Hashtag Real Talk with CFS. So this week, Pam is on vacation, so it is Whitney taking over again. And today I am here with John Julio of our CSA program. So hi, John, how are you?
Hi, good. Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to ask him a couple questions, but more so I just want him to go into some detail about our CSA program, Community Service Agency, and who it helps, who it's made of, and basically what it does within the community. So let's start by, if you just want to go into a little bit about who makes up the CSA program, let's dive into some of the roles.
Sure. Well, the CSA program, it was created back in 2005 after the Rosie D lawsuit that happened in Massachusetts, where a kiddo had unfortunately passed away, and there weren't any really programs or services available to children that were experiencing mental health illnesses. So this whole initiative was created, and the CSA was kind of one of those products of that initiative. So that happened back in 2005. I believe our agency started in 2009, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I believe that we kind of created, we had the program come to our agency back in 2009. And so it's designed to help families that have a kid under 21 really kind of get access to different supports and resources in the community that the caregiver might not otherwise know that is available, or just not really like be aware that they are available in the community. And so our team really comes in and partners with them just to do a lot of that education and advocacy with them, as they kind of are navigating this mental health field, sometimes for the first time, which can be very overwhelming. So in our program, it is made up of myself as the program director. I currently have my assistant program director, Nathan. I have two senior family partners who are Alicia and Lori. And then the staff is comprised of intensive care coordinators and family partners. So they are two people that come as a team when we assign them to a family. The care coordinators are exactly what their role is. They're care coordinating. So they work with the families to kind of do a lot of comprehensive home assessments and youth assessments to just find out what the families and youth's family strengths and needs are. And so they will do a risk assessment. They will kind of do a more in-depth like assessment to learn more about the youth and you know what their providers are, how they have been doing, what kind of challenges they are experiencing, and then you know gather some other information from that. And then they do a CANS assessment, which is a child and adolescent needs and strengths assessment that they get certified to do. And based on all of that, that is what they will use to assemble their treatment plan, which we call a care plan document. And that will really kind of guide the family and the team on pursuing what goals that they're identifying. And so through that, that's where they're going to make sure that services and supports are being identified, that are getting put in place, and that are really kind of maintaining communication across the board. So they really work to just make sure that the communication is really consistent and that everybody's kind of all working on the same common goals, which is just to really help the youth be the best youth that they can be. They do a lot of collaboration with our local crisis teams, the schools, the hospitals, any other state agencies that might be involved, as well as like PCPs, psychiatrists and stuff like that. The care coordinators are the ones that kind of really make sure that things are getting scheduled, tasks that are identified at the care plans are being assigned and are being followed through on. And, so they kind of really do that coordination piece. The other half of the team is the family partners, which their role is family support and training. And this is a very important role because it's a requirement to be a family partner that you have to have lived experience. So all of our family partners are people that have come into this with experience having a child of their own that has gone through significant mental health needs and challenges, and that they've had to really like learn sometimes the hard way what they need and like how to best support their child. So our family partners really had that piece to be able to connect to the families and say, hey, I've been in your shoes. I am still in your shoes in some cases. And I'm here to just be with you, and just support you the best that I can. So they do a lot of that kind of one-on-one work with the families, and they really get involved in terms of helping them advocate. The program follows the wraparound principles. And so there's 10 of those, but one of the other parts of kind of wraparound is, do for, do with, and cheer on. So when we get involved with a family at the beginning, it might be very overwhelming for them. They really don't know what to do or where to turn. So we're going to be doing a lot for them, as they kind of get to, you know, are working through the program. We try to transition it to doing with. So instead of a family partner filling out an application for them, they're instead assisting the parent as they're sitting at their kitchen table, filling it out and just doing it with them. And then eventually getting to a point where we're just cheering them on and the parent knows, hey, my kiddo had a really bad day at school. They had to call crisis. I already was in contact with the school. I already talked to his doctor and I talked to the crisis team. So like these plans are in place, and that's where we're cheering them on, because they kind of that's where we know that they've gotten it. And so they're at a point where they're ready to kind of like transition. So those are the two roles that we have. They work very intrinsically as a team, and you know, it's one with the other. It's a very strong partnership that you know works when they're following the kind of principles of our program.
That's awesome. So shout out to the CSA team, because the work they do is so important.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing what you guys do, for one.
Thank you.
No problem. So let's take us on your journey, your personal journey in the CSA program. So you just got a new promotion, which is amazing. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So how did you get to start with the CSA program up until now?
So I graduated from my bachelor's program way back in 2015, and I took a little break from the field. And so I was working somewhere else, but then around 2017, I was kind of starting to feel like I wanted to you know, do what I paid a lot of money to get a degree for. So I actually joined Child and Family in 2017, and I was working in the Fall River office with the Parents as Teachers program, which that was a program that we worked with youth kiddos under five, and worked on like development and milestones and all that stuff. So I did a lot of that work with the families, and I loved it, and it was very much a home for me. Very, very grateful for that experience. Shout out to Catherine and Melissa. I adore them. And they know that. So I did that for 4 years. And then while I was doing that, I was able to also do the master's program over at Bridgewater, to get my master's degree. And, you know, obviously the flexibility of Child and Family really afforded me that opportunity to not have it be a stressful experience. And then I graduated in 2021 and, did not do anything right away in terms of jumping to a new job. Just because I've always been somebody that's like, if something falls into my lap or if like an opportunity presents itself, I will always consider it. And so right from graduating, nothing really was jumping out at me. And then around Christmas of 2021, the position was posted for a senior care coordinator, which is a supervisor for our care coordinators. And I really wasn't considering it, but then I got into some conversations with like Tiffany and just kind of like looking at what my kind of trajectory for my career was going to be. And I decided like, it sounds like something that I really could see myself growing and benefiting from. And it was something that was going to be, you know, leadership. And I have always kind of had that mindset of, I would love to, you know, grow and stay with an agency and see what I can develop myself to kind of be. And, So I took the jump and I came over to Acushnet Ave. So I started as a senior care coordinator. And, you know, so I did that, I started that in January, February of 2022. So, I mean, that kind of, I supervised the care coordinators. I worked with Nathan and we like process referrals, doing all that work, collaborating with the different agencies that send referrals in. That's what I had been doing. And then, just this year in January, Krista she was our program director. She got promoted to be the VP over at, Church Street, and, her position was available, and I went for it, and I fortunately was, I was fortunately given the opportunity to become the leader for our CSA program. And, I am very, very happy with that. So it's been a very busy couple of months as I'm learning everything. But it's been the best couple of months that I could have anticipated. It's been very fun for me to be learning more of like the behind the scenes stuff with just like running a program, and like looking at numbers and kind of working on all that stuff. So it's been a very different experience from what I've been used to, but I'm very grateful that I get to have the chance to really lead this program, that I have so much passion for and I believe in so much. I'm really happy that I get to be like the voice of our CSA program here.
Awesome. No, we're so happy for you. I don't think you guys realize how cool he is. He has a Disney arm.
Oh my gosh. Stop
tattooed
it.
Disney arm. I love it.
Thank you so much.
No, we're very happy for you. So typically let's circle back to within the program, the ICC, which we talk a lot with acronyms. So everything has an acronym. The ICC portion is the intensive care coordination.
Yes.
So if you can let us just a little bit more detail on exactly what that means, mm-hmm. for a kiddo that needs, well, exactly what it is, the intensive care.
Yeah. So I mean, what really kind of makes a kiddo eligible and really kind of shows that they are in need of care coordination really comes based on what the kiddos exhibiting for different like behaviors in the community, school, home, any combination of those. And, you know, the parent or guardian or caregiver is just kind of really feeling overwhelmed, confused. A lot of the times it's their first time really having any experience with mental health and navigating this system that a lot of the times is not very clear on what's available. And so they really, outside of just like hearing, oh, a therapist would be good, like they don't know what other things are available in the community. And so the care coordinators, they are really kind of responsible and do their work in kind of showing these families like, yeah, there's other things available. Like there's mentors, there's in-home therapy, there's behavioral therapy. There's, you know, getting connected to like community centers or the YMCA. A lot of things that parents sometimes or caregivers might not fully realize is something that could help mental health are things that could be very beneficial to the kiddo. So the care coordinators really do a lot of work to just like educate and shine a light on the different areas of mental health and mental health services. So that way the parents kind of know what's available. But then something that I forgot to kind of mention when I was talking about their roles is in our wraparound principles, it's very guided by the family. One of the 10 main principles is family voice and choice, which is kind of like one of the things I highlight the most with our families when I'm processing a referral, because it's really unique to our program. And it's so important because we're not going to come into a family's life and say, we think that X, Y, and Z would be good for your kiddo. The conversation is always going to be, these are options. So here's option X, Y, and Z. What do you as the caregiver think it would be beneficial for them? X, Y, Z, none of the above, all of the above. And so the conversations are just so geared in that direction that the families feel like we're really like giving them a voice because they have a voice. And we just really highlight that they are the best. They have the most knowledge about their kids. Like they know what's going to work for their kiddo. But it's also okay for them to say that they don't know what's going to work for their kiddo and that they're just kind of trying to like figure things out. But that's also where we're just kind of here really partnering with them and just working to make sure that, you know, whatever they feel like is going to be in need for their kiddo is really what's getting worked on. And then, I mean, outside of that, the care coordinators just, they do a really good job at just like piecing the puzzle together, as I like to say. outside of like safety concerns, when we do our risk assessments and all of that, if there's any like safety concerns, those will always be prioritized. But outside of that, we really just partner with the families. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty much with the ICP, which is an individual care plan. That's pretty much exactly what you just discussed. It's really individualized attention for each kid, mm-hmm. each family, and what works best for them. What's a typical when, you know, the care coordinator sits down to make the care plan? What do they start with? What's a typical sort of care plan look like for?
So when they have their care plan meetings, they use their care plan document to kind of like guide that meeting. And so they go through kind of everything. So they'll talk about their agenda for the meeting, what they're going to be talking about. They will develop before they do their first care plan, they will kind of develop, where the family partner develops a family vision with the family. And the family vision is, again, it's in the parents' own or the caregiver's own words. It is what do they picture their family looking like when they're done with ICC services and or the CSA program. So the family's able to kind of create that vision. And so then at the care plan meeting, that vision is talked about. And the guardian gets a chance to rate that vision and where they see it right now in this moment on a scale of 1 to 10, and why they feel that way. And then based on that, they will kind of move through the care plan document. They build a team mission into it. And, you know, that's kind of everybody that's involved, what they're kind of, you know, dedicating their time to be doing with the family. They will talk about who the providers are that are currently in place, who their supports are, formal and informal. They will do a lot of talk around the strengths of the youth and of the caregiver. One thing we like to highlight is functional strengths. So like not just he's caring, but like he's also a really good cook or he loves to play basketball. So we really like to highlight those strengths, both, you know, just like strengths and then also functional, just so we know kind of when we're developing goals, like we know that, for example, we know that this youth is struggling in school, but does a really good job focusing when he's helping his caregiver bake a cake or something. So now you know that like in your goals and like in the tasks and stuff, you can develop a goal that kind of can fit baking with the guardian as part of it. So that's a big piece of it. They will do, they'll talk about some ground rules and kind of develop what the team as a whole feels is appropriate for ground rules. And then they just really talk about what the goals are going to be. They look at the CAN scores, which is that assessment that they do at the beginning, and the parents are able to, or the guardian are able to prioritize what needs from that CANS assessment they want to work on. So again, our care coordinator and family partner is not going to say these scores were this, so we need to work on this. It's here's all of your scores that were scoring a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the most important outside of safety? So after they do that, then they'll kind of develop goals, and they will do a whole brainstorming session during the care plan where the guardians and anybody that's part of the team can just kind of like throw out options. Again, it's just brainstorming. So nothing's going to be putting into place yet. Mm-hmm. It's just talking about what could be something that we look at. And then after that brainstorming, the guardian can kind of like look at that list and say, okay, I think that and that are things that would be probably good to try and like look into further. Right. And so that is how they'll develop their tasks and, you know, divvy it up among the team, and kind of see who's going to be responsible for what moving forward between this care plan and the next care plan meeting. And then, as I said, like it gets kind of divvied up around who's at the meeting. Who's at the meeting again is all determined by the parents or the guardian. The kiddo might have a therapist and a TM and a psychiatrist and all this stuff. But if the guardian's like, I don't really feel like they need to be at these care plan meetings, then we won't have them there.
Yeah.
The people at the meeting are all people that the family wants to be there.
Right.
So it's very much, you know, it's able to really kind of be a situation or an environment where they feel comfortable to really be talking about what's going on. So,
yeah. And that's a great example of how we're intertwined with our other programs.
Yeah.
Our mentoring. Yep. things of that nature. So that's awesome, because I'm learning today right along with everyone, because all the details of this program I was not aware of. And it's
a big great. Program. Yeah,
it is. It's really great. So who typically makes referrals? How do they enter into the program?
So referrals can come from really anybody. We've gotten referrals from guardians themselves. We've gotten referrals from family members, and then a whole variety of different providers. We typically see a lot of referrals come in from our MCI team. And we get referrals from the schools a lot. Sometimes we'll get referrals from the pediatrician's office. But then, I mean, any provider that's working with the family, if it's kind of a need that they think would be beneficial, they will always put a referral in. So it's not uncommon for us to get referrals from a therapeutic mentor or in-home therapy team or in-home behavioral, just as they kind of like see that a family might need a little bit more kind of like dedicated attention to care coordinating outside of just like somebody putting one referral in for something else. Right. So that way we can kind of like really assess the needs overall.
Mm-hmm. In the CSA program, John and his team are located at our Acushnet Ave site. So 3057 Acushnet Ave. So before we wrap up, without mentioning obviously any personal information or names or anything of that nature, do you have a client success story that just it's stuck with you, or it doesn't not necessarily the best? We're not going to say that, because helping everybody is the best, mm-hmm. but something that really you're really proud of and stuck with you.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a couple different scenarios, and I mean, part of the CSA program is that we are voluntary and there's no specific amount of time that a family needs to be engaged with us. So we've had families that have come in, been engaged for like a month or two, and then feel like they don't really need our program. But then we've had families that have been involved for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then there's obviously a wide range of length of stays in the program in between that. One family that I am thinking of particularly actually just recently graduated, and this kiddo came into our program, was being seen by crisis very frequently, had a couple of inpatient hospitalizations. This kiddo really did not have any formal supports in place. This was kind of a newer experience for the family, and they just really didn't know what to do or where to go. And you know, so we're coming into this family's life really for the first time. And they're just like, they were very overwhelmed by the youth's behaviors, because they didn't want anything to happen. And obviously we don't want anything to happen where it turns into, you know, something more extreme. And so we had our care coordinator and our family partner assigned to them, and they worked with them for about a year and a half. They're just about ready to close, and it was a rocky start as they're trying to like learn what is available, and the guardian was trying to figure out what they thought would be good for the kiddo. They have had more crisis involvement while they've been enrolled in our program, including inpatient stays. But that's the beauty of our program, is that we stay connected. And like, if a kiddo goes inpatient, we're going to be talking to that hospital facility and coordinating meetings with them. You know, we're going to stay connected to the guardian while they're there, make sure that like the guardian knows what's happening with their treatment. And so, you know, while they've been enrolled in the program, they were able to really kind of assess what the needs are, look at, you know, this is what the kiddo has experienced in their life. And, you know, they developed a really nice care plan meeting document. They really worked through a lot of those goals. As goals were being met, they were able to develop new goals. So it was never something where we were feeling like they were just open to be open. Cause we never want a family to feel like we're a crutch for them. Like our goal is to close, so that way they know right. how to advocate, and they know what services they need to get connected to when something happens in the future. And so this family, like, they really did not take that approach at all. Like, they were very engaged with our care coordinator family partner. They always were attending meetings, and, you know, they just really took everything very seriously, and they learned what the mental health system looks like. They learned, you know, how to navigate, how to find services. And they really they took everything that we were teaching them and really like internalized it. And yeah, they finally got to a point where they were like, we feel like we can manage things now. And they were able to kind of like really start to coordinate their own care for some things that were starting to happen a little bit more recently. And, you know, that's when we know that they're ready right. to kind of fly on their own. So the care coordinator family partner, they had a final meeting. They did a little graduation. The family got them flowers, which was, I mean, so, so sweet, and beautiful to hear and kind of see. So, yeah, it's really nice when you see something like that happen, and you're kind of able to see, you know, beginning to end.
Yeah. What something that you had mentioned and it opened my eyes to it. They really let you into their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's a special thing.
And they don't have to. And right. that's like the yeah. beauty of it. Yeah. Like they really are doing this because they want to, because we're not forcing them to be enrolled in our program. And we highlight that when Nathan and I are processing referrals, we let them know, like, we are not something that you have to do. And, you know, if you ever feel like you don't need us or want us, or if things aren't working, you just let us know. And like, we'll work with you on that transition. Right. So
they genuinely want that.
Yeah.
Want your help. And you're just setting them up to advocate for themselves and their child.
Right. Exactly.
Awesome. So thank you so, so much, John.
Thank you.
This has flown by. We were both a little apprehensive, you know, nervous, because I can't fill Pam's shoes, but I'll try when I have to. But
I think you did a great job.
Thank you. And you did amazing at highlighting the CSA program. And I learned things. So I just know that the listeners are going to come away with some things as well. So thank you, and stay tuned for another episode. Bye.